I'm Lester Holt. Tonight on Dateline, she auditioned for The Voice, then her voice was silenced forever.
You approach the door, it's open a crack.
I took like a step or two in and I seen her. She was tied up, hands behind her back.
Egypt was bound with Christmas lights.
Who does that?
Nobody knows how life goes.
What did you think when she said, I'm gonna go try out for The Voice?
Thought you're gonna win.
There could have been women that were jealous of Egypt.
Could have been somebody that was infatuated with her at the bar.
The lieutenant said, we really want him to come in and talk to us.
He said, you look guilty, is what he told me. And I was like, I'm not guilty.
Was it tunnel vision with the police?
Absolutely. That's what brought my involvement into our own investigation.
It's a case that I can't shake.
You're on the edge of your seat, literally till the last second, as to who the killer is.
Yes.
Her final moments must haunt you.
To know that she knew she was gonna die, it just makes me feel like, why?
Here's Andrea Canning with The Wrong Door.
Nobody knows how life goes. Nobody knows how it unfolds.
She had a very strong voice. Most of the time, she didn't need a microphone.
I love to hear her sing.
As you wait for tomorrow, live for today, let yourself grow.
Egypt Covington was born to sing.
Just the wow factor when she sang was amazing.
Her voice had a way of bringing everyone together.
She had a light that shone. She would always lift people up, lift their situation up.
But once she was gone, the mystery of what happened to Egypt made it impossible for those who loved her to agree on anything.
It's so sad that it tore her family apart. It tore some of her friends apart.
This really divided people.
It divided her family. It divided the entire community.
The community where Egypt Covington lived is a town called Belleville, just outside of Detroit in eastern Michigan. A friendly little place where, between her singing and her job as a popular bartender, just about everyone knew Egypt.
She had this amazing, canny talent of seeing you right into your heart. When you met Egypt, you walked away better, feeling better about your day, yourself.
Curtis Meadows was her boyfriend.
We're going to move in together. We're going to save her house and, you know, share life's moments with each other, you know, for the rest of our lives together.
On Friday, June 23rd, 2017, Curtis started his day, as usual, by checking in with Egypt.
Every morning that she doesn't say, I always send her a good morning text, like, good morning, my love, good morning, babe.
Did she respond?
Nothing. Usually she always responds within, like, 15, 20 minutes and nothing. Then I start, you know, texting her again, is everything okay? Then I'm in my mind, you know, just I'm thinking, well, she probably went to work and forgot her phone at home.
But the hours ticked by, and no texts from Egypt, no calls, no social media posts. So after work, Curtis drove over to Egypt's house. He says as he pulled up, he got that pit in the stomach feeling.
I seen her car there, and it just hit me. Just, you know, now, like, all your worry just hits full-fledged, 100%, and you just know something ain't right.
Egypt lived in a duplex apartment inside a house. When Curtis got out of his truck, the front door was ajar. Once inside, the door on the right led to her neighbor's, and the door on the left was Egypt's.
I took like a step or two in, and I yelled her name, and her dog Ruby barked, let out a bark. And by then, I took two more steps in, and Ruby met me, kind of like, hey, come with me. Like, turn around, follow me. And I walked about two, three more steps into the kitchen. Then you can kind of see in the living room.
He says what he saw unraveled him to the core.
She was tied up, hands behind her back, in like a fetal position on the ground. blood clearly covering the side of her head. And it's just... So I ran out. I was in shock. My phone was in the center console of my truck, and I called 911.
911.
I just showed up at my girlfriend's house, and I walked inside. She's there, tied up. She's dead. There's blood around her head. She's dead.
And what's her name?
Egypt Covington. Jacqueline Egypt Covington.
Okay, hold on. Don't hang up.
No, okay. Oh, my God.
The Van Buren Township Police rushed to the crime scene.
The officer's making their way. They'll be there in just a couple of minutes. Just hang in there.
When the officers arrived, they found Egypt on the floor with a gunshot wound to her head. Right away, two things stood out. The house wasn't broken into. And this was strange. On this June night, Egypt's wrists were tightly bound with Christmas lights.
As humans, we're not wired to, like, see that and deal with it. Beyond having those images in your head of someone that you love deeply, then you're trying to fathom your future's gone and everything you planned out in life is gone.
The dark news raced through Egypt's large family. This is her father, Chuck.
How do you find out that something has happened to her?
And I got a call from my daughter, Beth, hysterical, saying that Egypt was, I don't know if she said killed or dead, but that I should go to her house. And I got in my vehicle and was driving down the road, hoping something that can't be so.
The family patriarch then had to make a series of gut-wrenching phone calls. He dialed Dwayne, Egypt's half-brother, who was out with friends.
We're all sitting there taking pictures, having drinks, and then I got a phone call. I just looked at it, and it was Chuck calling me, and that's not very typical. And so I answered it. He's crying on the phone and said, she's gone.
Did he say Egypt, or did you just know?
He said Egypt after that. He was having a hard time saying it. And just fell to the floor, and my friends came and got me and took me out the back.
Chuck also called his ex-wife, Tina Covington, Dwayne and Egypt's mom.
He said, "Can you hear me?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Egypt's been murdered." And I just dropped. And all I can remember is screaming and crying and not my baby. And how could that happen?
Tina's mind was tormented by terrifying thoughts of her daughter's last moments.
It was like, Mommy wasn't there for you, you know? How could I have protected you? What could I have done better? It just makes me feel like, why?
Why? And of course, who? No one knew right then how the search for answers would tear a town and a family apart.
Who would want someone so full of life dead? When we come back.
One clue leads to a dark conclusion.
For me, I kept thinking, that means that someone who knows her and possibly loves her just killed her.
News of Egypt's murder was spreading fast in this peaceful lake town.
A woman found dead in her home, and police not saying much about who may have done it.
It was a story closely tracked and reported on local TV.
Coco, are there any leads in her case?
Karen and Steve, right now there are no leads in this investigation.
Coco McAvoy, who now works for Fox LA, covered the story for NBC affiliate WDIV.
So when I first heard about the story and heard about the fact that Egypt was shot and killed inside of her home, that instantly captivated me because that could be anyone shot and killed inside of their own home.
Police had said there were no signs of forced entry.
So for me, I kept thinking that means that someone who knows her and possibly loves her just killed her.
And as investigators would learn, the circle of people who knew and loved Egypt was enormous. She was part of a big blended family of step and half siblings. Her parents, Chuck and Tina, divorced when she was young, and she was also close with her stepmom, Chris.
You were almost like a teacher to her in some ways, like a teacher of life.
That's what parents do, I think. You know, you want to teach your kids to be able to go out there and be successful and to be content.
She was lucky to have three different parents, and, you know, that could help her grow up and thrive.
She just was bigger than life. So many people loved her. She had a ton of best friends. She had a ton of acquaintances.
Leslie Dixon met Egypt at work, Egypt's very first bartending job.
I remember teaching her to pour her first beer and her opening it, you know, just a little bit and just like, why is it foam? And I'm like, no, girl, pull it down, you know. And
oh, yeah, this is like the ground floor of pouring a beer.
We were off and running after that.
It was her brother, Dwayne, who got Egypt into bartending. The siblings worked alongside each other.
So you two were side by side behind the bar?
We were side by side.
I love that.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. It was fun. We'd have our little routines that we would do. We'd have some light shows, turn down the lights, have flaming bottles of liquor.
Wow.
we'd, you know, just have our jokes in between each other and have a lot of fun. So we had a lot of regulars that would come in, mostly to see her because she was like a shining light, but I was somewhat funny too.
She was great behind the bar, but Egypt had bigger plans. Craft beer is a booming industry in Michigan, and Egypt landed a job with a distributor as a beer sales rep.
It was all coming together. She was taking off with the distribution. This was going to be her career, alongside with trying to get into the music business.
When Egypt took the stage, she owned it.
There was no inhibition. That was her. And she didn't care. It was like, I either sound good or I sing bad, but I'm singing it.
And that's exactly what she did in 2014 at Country Idol, a popular competition in eastern Michigan. The DJ didn't have the music for the song Egypt had rehearsed, so like a true performer, she winged it. Her friend Nori Drock helped her rehearse a new song on the fly.
She grabbed her sister and me and like, almost like, come out here in the hallway and help me practice. I have 10 minutes. And that was just her energy. Like, nothing was going to bring her down. Just reacted and blew everyone away in the audience.
The winner of W4 Country Idol 2014, Egypt!
How much fun was that? It was when she amazing. Won. And like, I remember her like yelling up there and just like, almost like she was shocked, but none of us were. We knew like, oh yeah, you're gonna do this and you're gonna win.
That win sparked something in Egypt. She set out to audition for The Voice on NBC and started recording with a local producer.
She's the life of the party. She brings the energy for sure.
Music producer Kevin Zawala, also known as Mr. Peace, says he saw big potential.
What did you think the first time you heard Egypt sing?
Wow. It was just like a presence that she controlled it. You know, she controlled the stage and she made you want to listen to her.
Egypt's talent and her gusto for life drew a lot of people to her. And that can sometimes make a murder investigation quite complicated.
Who is it? Could have been somebody that was infatuated with her at the bar and followed her. Is it a friend? Is it a family member? Who knows?
Coming up, police focus on Egypt's relationship with her boyfriend, Curtis, a romance with highs and some said lows.
She was just so distraught and crying to where I couldn't really understand what she was saying.
Sounds like a bad fight.
It wasn't good.
When Dateline continues.
It was Egypt's boyfriend, Curtis Meadows, who had made the grim discovery. His girlfriend killed by a single bullet to the head. And no surprise, he was of instant interest to Van Buren police detectives.
Because he was the current boyfriend at the time, police wanted to question him. They wanted to know, was he at all responsible for Egypt's murder?
The police had to talk to you?
Correct.
You're the boyfriend?
Yes.
You're going to be moving in?
I understand.
And they always look at the significant other.
The closest too, yeah. I was questioned there on site. I was there for a few hours, wrote down my statement, and then, you know, by phone from there on out with questions.
Detectives quickly learned that Egypt and Curtis had a history together that wasn't all smooth sailing. They had a series of breakups and makeups dating back to 2008 when they first met. Egypt had just turned 20 and Curtis was 28.
She worked at a local establishment in our hometown. And I'd never seen her before. I just happened to stop in. I lived right on the corner. It's kind of the cliche love at first sight, but I knew that was someone I was very interested in at the beginning.
And how long did you two date for?
Wow. I mean, we dated on and off a few times. The first time was almost 2 years, year and a half, roughly. And
what happened?
Life got in the way of schedules. I was obviously, I had a 9-to-5 job. I had a daughter, and she was a bartender. I was getting up for work when she was getting home for work.
He broke her heart.
Oh, he did.
Oh. And I remember that, so that's why I was like,
We sat on the steps, and she cried, and we sat on the steps, and it was like, and you know you have to tell them. Relationships come and go.
Egypt's dad said that she was pretty upset with the breakup.
Yeah.
Because she was in love with you.
Yeah. It was tough. Egypt was a very passionate, and she was a lover. She loved hard, and it was the right thing for us both.
Egypt's friend, Brooke Brandstatter, says the relationship was at times quite a roller coaster. She remembers a big fight the two had in the middle of the night.
What was the fight over?
I don't remember the details on that. She came knocking at my door at like 2 a.m. I was sleeping and I let her in and she was just so distraught and crying to where it was kind of one of those where I couldn't really understand what she was saying. Mm. And I just wanted to comfort her and just let her know that she stay here tonight. You're okay. Don't walk home.
Sounds like a bad fight.
It wasn't good. No, it wasn't a good fight.
A Van Buren detective was now asking people in Egypt's close circle some uncomfortable questions.
He also had asked me if I had ever known of Curtis hitting her. And I did not know. I never heard of an incident of them. But I do know they've had some pretty bad fights.
Did you think it could be Curtis?
I did. I mean, I wasn't ruling anybody out. I didn't know if maybe they got in a fight. There was a couple times where I did go back to the police station, Van Buren police, wanted to make sure that everybody was being looked at. I didn't want anybody to be eliminated.
Egypt's dad, Chuck, was thinking along the same lines.
Were you ever concerned that it could be Curtis, given that he's the significant other right now, which is often the first person that the police look at?
Yes. I thought of every person.
Did you have anything to do with Egypt Covington's murder?
No. No, no, no. Not whatsoever.
Did you tell them that over and over again?
Yes. Most definitely, yes.
Curtis also told police and us that at the time Egypt was killed, their relationship was as solid as ever. After about 5 years of the on-again, off-again drama, he was about to move in. They were planning their future.
It was for real this time?
For real.
Egypt's friend Leslie says Egypt thought so too.
So why was the timing right this time?
I think that everybody was just in the right space and they wanted to revisit what they had before. And this time it was better. You know, it was the right time.
Police weren't quite done with Curtis. Within days, he was hooked up to a polygraph machine.
So when they asked me to do a lie detector test, you know, where do you want me to be when and whatever time, I'll be there 30 minutes early. Whenever you need me, I'll be there. Let's get their attention off me so they can worry about finding the right person.
And some close to Egypt were starting to wonder if the right person might be found right next door.
It was just the traffic going in and out constantly. It's a revolving
this
door.
This is what she said.
This is what she said.
Coming up, troubling stories about a different man in Egypt's circle.
Was he in love with her?
I think that he was obsessed with her.
Egypt Covington was a Michigan native. She'd grown up here in Belleville, a beautiful lake town. When she was finally out on her own, she found that apartment in the duplex on the outskirts of town.
She really loved her duplex. She was very proud of her duplex.
Her next-door neighbors in the duplex were also Egypt's friends. But not long before she was murdered, Egypt's mom says that Egypt shared something with her.
She said, "Mom, I gotta move." And I'm like, "Why?" She said, "It's really getting scary over there." She said, "There's people in and out of there I've never seen before, but not the type of people you want to see."
Oh, no.
She had a gut feeling there were some bad things happening.
And did she express what those bad things were?
Drugs.
Egypt's neighbors had a license to grow and sell legal medical marijuana. According to Tina, Egypt worried about her safety.
Did you tell her you should get out?
I told her to come and stay with me, and she was like, "Oh, no."
Egypt's neighbors said they never sold anything illegal, but could the marijuana business next door have anything to do with Egypt's murder? Detectives questioned the neighbors and asked them where they were the night of the murder. Turns out they were at a music festival 200 miles away and nowhere near the scene of the crime.
At this point, there's no one in custody for the murder of Egypt Covington, but they're still investigating.
And with no one in custody, the lake town was on edge.
That was something that scared a lot of people, because though police kept saying that Egypt knew her killer, they weren't releasing a lot of details.
If you knew Egypt, it was just unfathomable. You know, how do you lose somebody like that in this way?
Egypt's not the kind of girl to have enemies. No. that would ever want to do something like that.
I couldn't figure it out. At that point, every single person was a suspect to me.
By now, detectives were learning that Egypt had no shortage of men vying for her attention. One man friends heard stories about was a former boss.
Had they had a relationship?
I don't know.
A physical relationship?
If they did do it, any kind of relationship, it would have been, I don't think, an ongoing thing. It might have been a mistake.
He's married.
Yes.
The man had taken an interest in her singing career. Egypt! And after that big win at Country Idol, Egypt told Leslie he had offered to take her to Nashville for the next big tryout.
He was paying for stuff.
Yeah,
Her singing, for her to go to The Voice.
Yeah.
Was he in love with her?
I think that he was obsessed with her.
Leslie thought the trip to Nashville was a bad idea, but says Egypt went anyway. And when she got there, Egypt told Leslie there was an argument.
What was the fight over?
Oh, no, it was probably something to do with not having a relationship.
You think he might have been angry that she didn't want more?
Yeah, I think so.
Egypt's brother, Dwayne, knew him too and says he saw other red flags.
I know how fast he could react to things, so he was very hot-headed. And you set him off, he goes off his rocker.
Sounds like that would give you concern.
Yeah, it gave us concerns.
The former boss told us he cooperated fully with investigators. He says he was never romantically interested in Egypt and that his wife at the time knew all about their trip to Nashville. As for the description of his temper, he says he's a firm boss but denies being hot-headed. Still, family and friends passed anything they could think of onto police, hoping they could solve the mystery fast.
Like, you don't have a murderer behind bars, and this has happened to somebody who's so beautiful and loved by everybody. It kind of puts life in perspective, you know? You realize this can happen, and it's scary, and how do you protect yourself against something like this when there's no protection?
And as investigators questioned Egypt's boyfriend, they also asked him if he had any theories.
I had two clear-cut answers to that question.
Who did it?
Yes,
and
correct.
And what were the...
One was Kenny, and the other was something to do with next door. Number one was definitely Kenny.
Kenny was Kenny Mahalik, a guy Egypt had dated during one of her breakups with Curtis. And word was that he wasn't too happy about Curtis and Egypt's future plans.
It's the only time I remember Kenny being jealous.
That Curtis was moving in?
Yeah.
How did he express that jealousy?
Not well.
Coming up, why some said Kenny wasn't over Egypt.
She didn't feel like she could go anywhere where he wasn't there, and that just made her uncomfortable.
One encounter, Curtis says, led to an argument.
That's obviously not how she intended her night to go. She was very upset.
When Dateline continues.
Curtis Meadows told detectives over and over again that he had nothing to do with his girlfriend Egypt's murder.
Did you feel like a suspect, the fact that they're asking you to take a lie detector test?
Of course, you're in there and you try to think like this is their job, this is protocol. And, you know, it hurts. You know, you're trying to grieve the most unimaginable thing. And you're there, you know, asked the most horrific questions.
When the test was over, he says the detectives told him he passed, and soon after he was cleared. But what about Curtis's suggestion to look into Egypt's ex, Kenny Mahalik? Investigators were learning that Egypt's family and friends knew him well.
I knew his family for many, many years.
Kenny was 10 years older than Egypt, a mechanic who was quiet, handsome, and a bit of a player.
He attracted a lot of women because he was so good looking.
Egypt's mom remembers a family gathering where Kenny caught Egypt's attention.
She pointed him out and she said, I'm going to date him someday. And I say, well, you know, his reputation is he's never going to get married.
What'd she say to that?
She said, I'll fix that.
While Curtis and Egypt were in the off phase, Egypt made her move on Kenny and the two started dating. Nori and Egypt worked together at a local pub where Kenny was a regular.
Did she seem really into him?
Not really. Obviously always cared for him, but there was just no, at least from what I saw, I did not really see like a spark ever.
Maybe just someone like Mr. Right Now?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a perfect way to say it. Yeah. A placeholder, I guess.
Did she tell you anything about him? Why she liked him? What his deal was?
You know, she didn't care about money, intellectual conversations as much. She needed companionship at that time.
After about 3 years, friends and family say Egypt was ready to break up with Kenny. But by then, she'd gotten close with his whole family.
All right, so that ends, but they don't completely cut ties.
Correct.
They remain friendly.
Friends, mm-hmm.
She even would go to some family outings.
She did.
I think that they left it so if I want to call you, I can call you, or if I want to text you, I can text you. There was never any complete breakoff.
It wasn't until Egypt and Curtis got back together again in a serious way that it became too difficult for Egypt to be friends with Kenny, especially in a small town like Belleville.
She didn't feel like she could go anywhere where he wasn't there. And that just made her uncomfortable.
Was he purposely showing up then? Because he knew she'd be there?
She made it seem that way. She and Curtis would be somewhere, and he would be there.
It sounds like Kenny was maybe still in love with Egypt.
Oh, for sure. I'm sure he was. It's hard to fall out of love with Egypt.
Her stepmom, Chris, said Egypt wanted to tell Kenny to give her some space, but it was hard.
And she said, Mom, he's like a lost puppy. And I said, you can't save every lost puppy. Sometimes you just have to do what you have to do and move on. Mm-hmm. She knew that if she still hung around with the family and not sever these ties, that it wasn't going to be fair. And she could not fully have the relationship with Curtis that she wanted.
According to Chris, Egypt was going to break the news to Kenny at the Strawberry Festival, an annual Belleville event that Kenny was guaranteed to be at with his friends. Curtis was going to be there too. That night, Curtis got there before Egypt and immediately spotted Kenny.
I kept my distance. You know, I wasn't trying to be imposing or anything. So I went to the opposite side, as far as I can get away, and sat with my friend's family. She showed up.
Egypt eventually made her way to Kenny, while Curtis watched from a distance.
I couldn't tell you what they were talking about, but you could tell it was some sort of intense conversation going on. I wasn't worried too much at that time.
You didn't want to stop it?
I mean, it you know, it was a social circle of, you know, five or six people, and I was just going to, you know, let Egypt dissolve it, and she'll take care of it, and I wasn't worried at that time.
Then, out of the corner of his eye, he could see Egypt walking toward him with Kenny in tow.
And I could see he was right on her heels following her to the table we were sitting at.
Curtis says Kenny and Egypt got in each other's faces, and then Egypt stormed off.
She was very upset. You know, that's obviously not how she intended her night to go.
That was a Saturday night, and 5 days after that very public fight, Egypt Covington was dead. Detectives were zeroing in on Kenny Mihalik. What would he have to say?
Coming up, why Kenny triggered alarm bells among Egypt's friends.
He would just have, like, an explosion sometimes. I was there when he punched a hole in the wall. Just very, like, short fused temper.
News travels fast, especially in a small town like Belleville.
When I first started reporting on the story, I instantly heard about Kenny. That was the name that everyone would bring up. Family members brought up Kenny. Police officers brought up Kenny.
So, of course, Coco had questions.
We tried to contact Kenny multiple times, but he was just not willing to do an interview.
Coco never got the chance to interview Kenny, and some friends hadn't talked to him either.
You would have liked a phone call from Kenny?
Yeah, we lost our friend together, you know? She's gone. It was shocking. The person that you guys are both close to doesn't ever reach out. Yeah, it feels weird, right? And I think a lot of people felt that way.
But detectives did talk to Kenny early on. They picked him up at a local bar in the hours after Egypt's body was found, drove him to the station, and grilled him. They wanted to know where he was the night of the murder. Kenny said he'd gone bar hopping, and later, during the critical window when they thought Egypt was killed, he was home, alone. Detectives hooked him up to a polygraph machine, and when the police told him he failed, word quickly spread around town.
And so when that happened as well, the pressure was already on Kenny in the community, but that really turned up the heat even more for people.
Right after that polygraph test, Kenny lawyered up and stopped talking to the police.
I've tried to process every scenario and look at every different thing, and him doing it is the only thing that makes sense to me.
It wasn't just the heated arguments, like the one at the Strawberry Festival, that bothered Curtis. He says it was Kenny's behavior leading up to Egypt's murder. One time, while Egypt was asleep in his bed, Curtis says he looked out the window and saw Kenny casing Egypt's car.
She was waking up, and I told her about the incident, and you know, I was like, hey, Kenny was just outside looking and you're peering in your vehicle. And the look she gave me wasn't like of a surprise or no way. It's almost like, you know, this has happened before or something. It was very strange.
Kenny says he was working in the area and just happened to notice Egypt's car. But according to her friend Nori, weird things with Kenny had happened before.
What kind of things did she say that raised red flags for you?
His anger, and I would see it. And also, I don't know, I don't know how I want to say something because it wasn't even just things she would tell me. I would see it.
You would see yourself.
Yeah.
Like, what did you see?
Really just his controlling, manipulative personality to her.
Nori says Egypt told her about one argument that she and Kenny had at a hotel. They were shouting at each other so loudly that hotel staff called the police. Nori says things with Kenny could escalate quickly.
He would just, shall we say, have it, like, an explosion sometimes. So whether that was verbally, whether that was like a time I was at the house, I was there when he punched a hole in the wall, type of thing. Just very like short fused temper.
Were you concerned that he might do more?
Yeah. Yeah. And also in my head, the protective part of me of like, okay, what happens when I'm not here or someone's not here and it's just them.
Nori shared the information with detectives. She also gave them text messages from Egypt and even some from Kenny that she believed showed his controlling nature.
People said that Kenny was a possessive person. They would always describe him in interviews as someone who was not happy about the breakup. So he was almost portrayed as the jealous ex.
Kenny says he was never manipulative or controlling with Egypt. Still, the stories made their way to the police and to Egypt's dad.
And I never would have thought of anyone having the reason to murder my daughter. But then when you breathe and you start to sort, certain things lead in certain directions.
Pretty soon, Chuck's mind was made up. He became convinced that Kenny was responsible for Egypt's murder.
He just had more of a reason to murder her because maybe he was disgraced, he was in love.
Many shared that same sentiment and stood with Chuck, except for one person very close to Egypt. Did this person know something no one else did?
Coming up, hard questions for one of the men in Egypt's life.
I said, "Did you murder Egypt?" And he cried like a baby.
And then, what was about to tear apart this close-knit town?
This really divided people.
It divided our family. It divided the entire community.
When Dateline continues.
Days turned into weeks. And here in this tight-knit community in eastern Michigan, Egypt Covington's killer was still out there. And while her family and friends waited for updates from police, they gathered to celebrate her life.
Thanks again for coming out to an evening with Egypt.
That same evening, Egypt's dad addressed the crowd.
This isn't TV. This is real. They are still walking around.
By now, it was no secret that he believed Egypt's ex-boyfriend Kenny was responsible for the murder.
Please, speak out. I don't mean to be negative, but she deserves justice.
Yes, she does.
Almost everyone there seemed to stand behind Egypt's dad. But there was one person in attendance who did not. Egypt's mom, Tina.
I saw Kenny with his nephews in the parking lot, and his mom was sitting next to me, and she said, "He's afraid to come in here." So I was like, "Get your butt over here and sit down."
Coco McAvoy was there covering the memorial.
And he sat next to Tina, and it was almost like the room got silent. She was the person who kept saying, "Van Buren police needs to look at other suspects," and she just did not believe it was Kenny, and she had various reasons for that.
Who did you think did it?
I didn't know, but I knew Kenny didn't do it.
Did you ask him?
Yes.
Did you do this?
Flat out. I just looked at him. I said, "Did you murder Egypt?" And he cried like a baby. He said, "Absolutely not. I loved your daughter."
Did you believe him?
Yes.
Tina trusted her gut. Call it mother's intuition. And even though she knew Egypt and Kenny fought, she never believed Kenny was a violent guy.
He's a big guy, but he's a gentle giant. If anything ever fueled any argument, it had to do with liquor.
Remember that fight at the hotel when the police got involved? Their report said both Kenny and Egypt were intoxicated and uncooperative. And some of Egypt's close friends say Egypt could give as good as she could get, especially when it came to Kenny.
I mean, it takes a lot to punch a hole in a wall.
Yeah, but also I think Egypt would say things that would push his buttons. She knew what buttons to press.
If you were around her, you understood that there is no little with her. There's no little energy. She was a big energy person. So with her and Kenny, you know, there were times they fought hard. Of course, it was a lot of nonsense sometimes, but it was because it was about passion.
Kenny's not a confrontational person. He does not raise his voice. He doesn't raise his voice often at all. He's a nice guy.
Tina's very public support for Kenny caused a rift in the family.
You were either on Chuck's side or you were on my side.
And your side was that you believed Kenny?
Yes.
And Chuck's side was that Kenny
yes.
murdered Egypt? This really divided people.
It divided our family. It divided the entire community.
Some friends, like Leslie and Brooke, found themselves thinking more and more like Tina, while Egypt's brother was torn and could see the divide between Egypt's mom and dad getting worse.
They weren't really in good terms throughout the years anyway, but we always had somebody that was a buffer, and Egypt was one of those as well, that kept, you know, somewhat peace between the family.
As for whose side he was on, for a long time, DeWayne didn't know what to think.
I wouldn't express that Kenny did it because I didn't know any better. I didn't know. I was just listening, and I'm pretty passive. I'm a pretty passive person, so I didn't really have any assumptions. I just wanted the police to figure it out.
Then, in the middle of all the tension and family drama, DeWayne met someone, a woman named Lindsay Brink.
And you chose not to tell her about Egypt.
That's right. I didn't want to, and I don't want to take this the wrong way, I didn't want to bring on, like, baggage at the moment.
But just a few weeks into dating, Lindsay found out anyway. Hard not to, really.
I said, "Who is this beautiful person on your phone?" Because it was his screensaver. Mm-hmm. And he said, "That's my sister." And I thought, well, that's kind of odd that you have your sister as your screensaver.
Right. So
I said,
well, you wanted to know why.
Yeah, why is she on your screensaver? And he said, well, she was murdered and it's unsolved.
Lindsay, who lived about 30 miles away from Belleville, remembered hearing about Egypt's murder, but didn't know anything beyond the headlines. DeWayne filled her in. He told her all about the family divide and that just about everyone, except for his mom, suspected Egypt's ex-boyfriend.
And it made me nervous because I was starting to fall in love with this man, with DeWayne, and I thought, who knows, if he killed your sister, how could he not kill you or possibly come after my children or me?
Then another thought crossed her mind. Could DeWayne, Egypt's brother, be the killer?
You actually considered that your own boyfriend might be the killer?
I considered everything. I considered everything. I didn't know him very long. I didn't know. And so then I drilled him. I said, where were you that night? Do you have proof of where you were that night? What happened?
DeWayne's story was airtight. But what about everybody else's? Lindsay, who was a kindergarten teacher by day, thought maybe they could help the police solve the mystery.
So your new lady went from girlfriend to detective in, like, no time flat.
Yes, she quickly took this and it drove her to start looking into some things. Let's get interviews. Let's go talk with so-and-so. And she was making phone calls, and she was all over the place. At 100 miles per hour, she's gone into it like an investigator.
She was just getting started when all of a sudden, in March 2018, 9 months after Egypt's murder, the Van Buren Township Police had an announcement. They had a person of interest, and the one and only person the police named was Kenny Mihalik. Lindsay needed to know why, from Kenny himself. So with DeWayne by her side, she picked up the phone and called him.
We just said, Kenny, did you do it? Did you kill her? And
what did he say?
He said, no. No, I did not kill your sister.
Now, most killers, if we're being real, are probably going to say, no, I didn't.
Yeah, that definitely was part of it. What I did then was say, do you have proof of that? Do you have proof that you did not kill her?
Kenny told them he did, and he agreed to sit down to tell his side of the story.
Today is June 14th, 2018. This is an interview with Kenny Mihalik.
Coming up, what Kenny says happened when he confronted Egypt about Curtis moving in.
It was just, why didn't you tell me? Like, what the f***?
Okay.
She didn't want to hear about it. She was kind of like, f*** you.
And then, a bitter falling out.
How did that go over?
It didn't go well at all. I ended up storming out of the house.
Nine months after Egypt Covington was murdered, police announced they had a person of interest, Kenny Mihalik. When we first interviewed Egypt's boyfriend, Curtis, in 2018, he was hoping an arrest would soon follow.
Is there anything you would say to Kenny?
Kenny, if you had anything to do with this, this is your only chance to be somewhat human and turn yourself in. and face the consequences.
Egypt's dad, Chuck, thought the same.
Turn yourself in. Turn yourself in.
Reporter Coco McAvoy worked her sources, wanting to know why the police were only now naming Kenny.
I remember the moment that news came out, I called the lieutenant and I asked him, what's changed? And he said, Coco, you know that Kenny did it. We really want him to come in and talk to us. And he said, be honest with us about what happened to Egypt.
Egypt's mom was still standing by Kenny. She hired her own private detective to investigate the case. And after that phone call from Lindsay, Kenny agreed to be interviewed by the family PI. He brought his attorney with him.
Today is June 14th, 2018. This is an interview with Kenny Mihalik.
The investigator wanted to know about Kenny's relationship with Egypt. It was complicated.
From the time we broke up, I think we were sleeping together on and off for at least that next 8 months.
Kenny told the PI they were definitely off by the time he heard Egypt and Curtis were moving in together. The PI wanted to know more about that public fight at the Strawberry Festival.
Tell me about the Strawberry Festival. What was that about?
I was there.
Who did you go there with?
Just kind of by myself.
Okay.
Like, I figured I'd know people there.
One of the people he knew there was Curtis.
And I overheard Curtis talking about Egypt moving in with him.
Who was he talking to?
I don't remember. I just kind of overheard it in, like, peripheral.
Okay.
And then, like, I think maybe half hour, 20 minutes later, Egypt came up. And I was like, hey, what's this I'm hearing about you and Curtis? And she didn't want to talk. She walked away, walked over to where Curtis was at. I walked over there, and I was like, what the f***? Like, we going to talk about this? And then she left.
Okay. Were you upset that he was moving in?
Not upset. I was just surprised she didn't tell me, kind of thing.
Did you guys maintain a fairly good relationship after you broke up?
Yeah.
Okay, so it was cordial?
She's like family. I mean, my sisters go to the movies with her. Like, she was part of my family, you know?
Kenny says they just exchanged some hot words, and it was hardly a fight that led to murder.
It was just, why didn't you tell me, like, what the f***?
Okay.
She didn't want to hear about it. She was kind of like, f*** you, and she was gone. And I think she left the Strawberry Fest.
And what about the story that he punched a wall during a fight with Egypt? Kenny didn't deny that he and Egypt had some pretty bad fights.
I had punched 2 holes in a wall and repaired them.
The PI also wanted to know where Kenny was the night Egypt was killed. And so Kenny offered up his timeline. That Thursday, he says he and his buddy spent the afternoon on the lake, and after that, they went bar hopping.
I went to Bayou, Egan's, and Lakeview all in right after another.
About what time? And how late did you stay?
I say I got there at 9 o'clock and stayed till 10.
Let's see. And then from there?
Home.
Oh.
All right, I got home, had some leftover burritos, watch Netflix or Hulu
on
my phone.
Kenny said he told the very same story to police, even urged them to verify it.
So I did everything off my phone, internet, TV, the whole deal.
Okay. Yeah, there's a way they can track that.
Yeah, didn't you tell them that? Didn't you tell them to check it?
I told them to.
Did they take your phone?
Yeah, they said, hey, we're going to take your phone. What's your password? So I showed them my password and gave them my phone.
Kenny said he looked for other ways to help detectives verify his alibi.
I have OnStar in my truck, and I told him, check that.
Kenny believed the police made their minds up about him from the get-go.
The first night.
Yeah, he said, you look guilty, is what he told me. And I was like, whatever you need, let me know. Like, I'm not guilty.
He said they stepped up the pressure right after he failed the polygraph.
Along the lines of, you did this, just berating me, basically, at that point. And then once they started saying, we're going to put you away for life, that's when...
You asked for an attorney?
Yeah, I asked for an attorney.
After the interview was over, the private investigator shared it with Lindsay and DeWayne. They started to believe that Kenny did have a good alibi, and maybe the police hadn't done enough to check it out. They decided to go to Chris and Chuck's to share what they were thinking.
Lindsay and I wanted to bring to the table, literally, the dinner table, and have a meeting with the family and a couple of her close friends and say, hey, you know, what if this isn't Kenny?
How did that go over?
It didn't go well. Didn't go well at all. And I ended up storming out of the house, and it was not a proud moment, but it was necessary because it turned into me needing to mind my own business and stay out of it.
The family was telling you that.
Mm-hmm.
She never even knew Egypt, never met Egypt, anything like that. Was very rude in our home, disrespectful.
To come into my house, to talk about things, to get up and leave while we're just kind of talking, I have no need to interface with that particular person anymore.
I mean this in the nicest way, but you could almost see someone saying, hey, new girl, you know, you just started dating DeWayne, and who are you to say that we've got the wrong guy?
I can see where they're coming from. I can, 100%. And that night, I said that exact same thing to DeWayne. I said, I'm done. I'm done looking into this. The police can do their job. Who am I?
What did he say?
He said, Lindsay, please don't. Please don't stop. Please don't allow this to stop our fight for my sister. And I still said, I'm done. I'm not here to break your family apart even more.
After some long talks, DeWayne managed to convince her to stay the course. And their next move was to get a meeting with the detectives. Let's just say, that didn't go so well either.
I'll tell you what, okay. Bring me something I'm done. Use instead of telling me I'm not doing my job properly, and I'll be a much better person with you.
Coming up, why someone other than Kenny was about to draw Lindsay's attention.
He came across as somebody who would possibly kill Egypt. That was enough for me and DeWayne to say, look into this.
And then a meeting with police goes off the rails.
How did you feel when you left?
Enraged. I was mad.
When Dateline continues.
In the year after Egypt passed, her colleagues at the microbrewery had come up with a cool way to remember her. A new beer was named after her, called A Girl Named Egypt. Her friend, Rick Lack, a mentor in the beer distribution business, helped develop it.
We have her photo.
Yeah, the likeness.
Her tattoo.
Her tattoo,
her
the
Instagram
microphone.
Her handle is the name.
And then there's a song bar, notes in there someplace,
yeah.
I believe.
Yeah, that was her tattoo.
Yeah. And we wanted to make it big and bold.
Because this is a strong beer.
It's a relatively strong beer by craft beer standards. 9% alcohol by volume, yeah. So you're certainly going to not operate heavy machinery after consuming a couple.
Strong like Egypt.
Strong like, right. Exactly, and that was the intent.
But the murder was still unsolved as her brother and his girlfriend immersed themselves in their own investigation. They created a Facebook page asking the public for tips.
We had a war room in our library where we actually took the wall and we started placing pins and writing names and web diagrams.
Even though Egypt's ex, Kenny, had been named a person of interest in her murder, they weren't convinced.
Did you get into that mindset where everyone kind of became a suspect in your mind?
Immediately.
Could it be her, mm-hmm.
We came with the impression that we wanted to be open-minded and say, who is it? Start listening to tips, looking into things, who could it be? And so it was anybody. Anybody was on the radar until you were crossed off.
Even though the police had already crossed off Curtis, Lindsay wasn't so sure and asked for a meeting with him.
Did you think it could be Curtis who killed Egypt?
Yeah. Yep. I absolutely thought that there was a possibility that Curtis killed Egypt. So we questioned him big time on it.
They also heard all those disputed stories about that married man Egypt used to work for, the guy who friends thought liked Egypt a little too much.
He just came across as somebody who would possibly be somebody who could kill Egypt. And that was enough for me and for DeWayne to say, look into this.
And they were also curious about Egypt's neighbors across the hall who had a license to sell medical marijuana. Could any of that have played a role in her death?
This is where Egypt lived. It's considered a duplex.
It is a duplex. You walk in that front main door. That is where both residents walk in. Once you open that door, you have two more doors. You have a door to the left and a door to the right.
Which side did Egypt live on?
Egypt lived on the left side.
The Van Buren police had been saying they had their person of interest, Kenny, but hadn't arrested him. DeWayne and Lindsay wanted to know why and asked if the detectives would meet with them to discuss Egypt's case. To their surprise, the police agreed. When she and DeWayne got to the station for the meeting, Lindsay pressed record on her cell phone and put it on the table.
What questions do you have?
So you're recording this meeting?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They didn't know.
Was there anything new happening? It's been a long time.
Okay. Where we stand right now is we followed up every lead that we physically have.
Lindsay and DeWayne quickly heard what they already knew.
Our person of interest, after the initial investigation, turned out to be Mr. Hawk, Kenny.
Mm-hmm.
As of right now, no information has came out strong enough, which has pulled us off of that. Excuse me, I'll rephrase that. Pulled me off of that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at any other thing that pops off, but we got to look at motive, means, opportunity, mm-hmm. and unfortunately, you know, person of interest, you know, checkbox every one of those.
Lindsay says they seem to place a lot of faith in that polygraph Kenny took, even though it wouldn't be admissible in court.
Kenny was very upfront with people in the community talking about how he failed his polygraph. Miserably. Okay. I sat in on it. I was there. I watched the interview. I interviewed him here. I know when someone's lying to me. I know when someone did something. He failed.
Get his name right.
Well, he did get his name right in the date. Besides that, he failed. You know, it's like he said, he failed everything.
Lindsay and DeWayne wanted to know if the police had found anything useful on Egypt's cell phone or iPad that would implicate Kenny or anyone else.
Now with the phones, were you able to ever get into the phone, the pad? That's the first time I've ever
met anyone. We're not going to talk about the phones.
If you're able to get into it.
We're not going
to
talk about it.
Okay. They kept telling us, we aren't talking about that. We aren't talking about that.
We just were curious if
we
was
phones,
able to get into it.
We're not going
to
talk about any details.
A lot of times detectives do keep things very close to the vest.
Yeah.
They don't provide people with information about cases, even family members.
Yes. We understood that. We understand that that's how an investigation works. However, we wanted them to get more resources involved.
The conversation got more and more contentious on both sides, especially when Lindsay and DeWayne asked police if they'd fully investigated Egypt's neighbors in the duplex.
We tried and they wouldn't talk to us.
I mean, they were at that electric festival a couple hundred miles away. We can pretty much prove they were there.
Wait, what do you mean pretty much?
Okay, listen, I'm not
going to
get...
No. What do you mean pretty much prove? We want to know that you can prove you had their phones.
They weren't home. They weren't home. I didn't go through their phones. They were interviewed. We talked to neighbors. You've seen them.
That's all I wanted to get at. You didn't go through their phones. So you haven't fully... I know. I'm tough.
I'll tell you what. Okay. Bring me something I can use instead of telling me I'm not doing my job properly, and I'll be a much better person with it.
Some of the things you do have the right to know, and we're telling you what you need to know, and things you just don't need to know, because it compromises our case. That's the bottom line.
The police did say they'd fully investigated that man Egypt worked for. He passed his polygraph test and had an airtight alibi.
His whereabouts and some information was established where we don't believe he had any involvement in it.
He was innocent. As they talked about the case, the conversation kept circling back to Kenny.
We keep going in a certain direction towards a certain person. Everything points to this certain person, everything that we have. Anytime we deviate, the path pulls us back. Every time we deviate in this direction, it pulls us back here. Everything is pulling us in one direction. All of our investigation, all of our findings, 8 FBI profilers from around the nation have looked at our case. 8.
They kept telling us, we need one more piece of evidence. One more piece of evidence, and then we'll put him away.
All we need is one more little thing.
But Lindsay and DeWayne weren't confident the police were going to find that piece of evidence. They had a suggestion. How about getting the Michigan State Police involved? The local detectives didn't like that idea.
This is what we do. This is important to us. Just like it's important to your family. Okay? We don't take this lightly. if I could hand this over right now to somebody and say, okay, hey, great, here you go. If you can put this guy in prison, do it.
Then do that. Can you do that? Can you give it over to the state? Then, if you just said we could.
They can't
we
do can't. Anything different. The state police doesn't have any more expertise on interviewing than our guys do.
How did you feel when you left?
Enraged. I was mad.
After that meeting, Lindsay and Dwayne made it their mission to get the case out of Van Buren and into the hands of the state police.
Okay. Do you notice anything on here?
The couple was more united than ever in their fight for answers. So united, they also decided to take their relationship to the next level.
In the midst of all of this, you had a bright spot. You proposed to Lindsay.
I did. How could I not?
The ring that he proposed gave me was to be Egypt's. It's a family ring that Egypt said she wanted when she got engaged. And his mom, without me knowing, said, you need to give this to Lindsay. And so it's a really special ring that now I have with me all the time. That was supposed to be for Egypt.
It's a little piece of her that you take with you.
Such an honor.
An honor and a reminder of the beautiful woman lost and the mystery still unsolved.
Coming up, finally, after so much frustration and division, a break.
We both just started bawling. It was like so powerful.
There was still no arrest for Egypt Covington's murder, and Lindsay and Dwayne were convinced the local police were focused on the wrong guy.
And so you and Lindsay started getting louder and louder.
That's right.
How would you describe Lindsay?
She's a warrior. She doesn't take no for an answer.
She just took off, and Dwayne was doing whatever he needed to do to help her do it.
Were you grateful?
Absolutely. You know, she had such courage. She wasn't afraid to ask the hard questions.
Questions like, why not get the Michigan State Police involved?
Why did you feel like the Michigan State Police would be a better fit for this case?
Well, we felt for sure Michigan State needed to be involved because of the resources that they have available. We knew that they had so many more detectives.
So Lindsay started copying the state police on emails they were sending to local officials, trying to draw attention to the investigation.
I sent it to the head lieutenant of Michigan State Police. I just started putting him on our emails.
Van Buren police must have been like, just get out of our business, lady.
Oh, yeah. That's what I wanted them. I wanted to be the most annoying fly in their face that they just wanted to shoo away and say, holy cow, get this girl out of our jurisdiction, Michigan State Police. She's all yours. That became a goal.
Lindsay and Dwayne created an online petition calling for the state police to take over the case. More than 14,000 people signed it. That didn't sit well with Egypt's dad and stepmom, though, who thought the local police were on the right track with Kenny.
You could even see on that Facebook page, the other members of Egypt's family, they would comment on the posts for the petition, and they would say, do not sign this petition no matter what. This is all a sham and such. And you just saw in real time a battle between two sides of people who loved Egypt.
Did it ever get where you're like, oh, this is too much? Like, we're pushing too many buttons. We're angering too many people.
Yeah, you know, I'm not one to mess around with the law. And, you know, I felt weird about it. And I know that she did as well, but it needed to be done.
You're gutsy.
I am.
Has anyone also called you nosy?
Yeah. Yeah.
You've probably been called everything at this point.
Yes, I've been called a lot of names. Yes.
Some saw Lindsay as a troublemaker who just wanted attention for herself. She says her motivation was simple.
You never met Egypt. Why did you become so passionate about finding her killer?
Because of the man that I love so dearly, Dwayne. And that's why I wanted him and his family to find justice.
I'm going to allow Lindsay to talk. Her hand is still raised.
Continuing that quest for justice, DeWayne and Lindsay also started popping up at town council meetings held over Zoom.
I would raise my hand. You raise it in
virtually.
Yep. And I would have a comment. And I said, so can you tell me what you guys are doing for Egypt's case?
They kept at it. Months went by. Then another year. Every chance they got, the couple pestered local officials, writing emails that criticized the local police, and asking for help getting the investigation moved to the state police.
We never got responses.
But one day, they did get a response, and it would help blow the lid off the case.
Dwayne calls me on his way to work and says, Lindsay, did you see the response from the township clerk? He forwarded it to me, and I said, babe, you were accidentally left on this.
Lindsay and DeWayne think the township clerk had meant to remove family members from the email chain before hitting send on this reply. Is there any way these emails to everyone can be blocked? I'm personally not interested in the stupidness.
We're talking about a woman in your town
Yes.
who has been murdered.
Yes. Yes. And so then, of course, I blasted that all over. I put it all over our page. I put it on the township pages. I gave it to the state police. I put it everywhere. This is what your county clerk thinks of an unsolved murder. Calling us this stupidness because we're trying to get her case in the right hands.
The stupidness comment created an uproar. The clerk later apologized, saying he meant no disrespect to Egypt or her family. He was just trying to get off the email chain, but the controversy helped fuel a public protest.
Justice for Egypt!
Let the state in!
Let the state in!
Lindsay and DeWayne held a march, and just one day later, word came that Michigan State Police were moving in.
How'd you find out?
Well, the head detective on the case said, we'd like to meet with you and DeWayne. And I said, does this mean that you guys... He's like, yes, we have Egypt's case fully. And wow. We both just started bawling on the phone with him. And it was like, it was so powerful.
So that was a good moment in all the heartache and
yeah.
the pain.
Yeah, it was very bittersweet. And I say that because at the same time, it was bringing on a lot of emotions about this could have happened a lot sooner.
But no one had any idea how soon things would heat up with news of an arrest that would send head spinning.
Coming up, who's under arrest? Police won't say.
I remember going online trying to look for people that had been arrested in that time frame to see if we could find a connection, to see if it was anybody I knew.
When Dateline continues.
By November 2020, more than 3 years had passed since Egypt's murder. The Michigan State Police had taken over the investigation. For Egypt's family and friends, the daily waiting game just started all over again.
How frustrating was it when over 3 years had passed and there was no arrest?
Yeah, it was very daunting to think that, you know, how could you do so much work and just have to do so much more? And how long are we going to have to fight for this?
Not much longer, as it turned out. Just over 3 months after the state police took over, Egypt's mom answered her phone to some unexpected news.
The state detective guy, I was the very first call that he made. He said, I know you've been waiting for this for a long time. And he said, we made an arrest.
What kind of emotions were you having?
I couldn't get so excited until it was done because I had already been to that height and then down and that height. And then down, and there were so many different stories out there that, you know, sounded really real.
First thing that goes through your mind?
It's just extreme, emotions, like a burst out. You just want to yell. I remember the hair standing up on the back of my neck, and I didn't even know what to do.
We started crying. We were jumping. I mean, I felt like we were, wanted to chest bump. It's like, what?
Egypt's dad and stepmom reacted with cautious optimism.
How do you feel? You feel like there's progress. You can't get joyous. It's not something you get happy about.
Especially since the police weren't sharing one key detail. who was arrested.
I remember going online trying to look for people that had been arrested in that time frame to see if we could find a connection, to see if it was anybody I knew. I do remember that.
Did you think it could be Kenny?
Honestly, when they said there was arrest made, it didn't pass that it wouldn't be.
The not knowing was torture for Dwayne and Lindsay.
We finally accomplished this. This is fantastic. And then we're sitting here thinking to ourselves, oh my gosh, like how could this be? How much more could this go to? Do we know this person?
Yeah. They're not telling you.
No, they're not telling any of this.
You have like this big question mark left after all this time.
Right. And one of them was, could it be Kenny? Who knows? All this information that said Kenny was somewhere else, could it still be?
So Lindsay decided to call Kenny herself. When he answered the phone, she quickly realized he wasn't in jail, so it couldn't be him.
What was Kenny's reaction when you told him?
Kenny's a pretty somber person. He said, wow, that's great. You know, he's pretty somber and just kind of quiet. He's real calm, cool, calm, collected guy, which I think was used against him in the early stages of the investigation.
He wasn't upset enough or...
Yep, but then it was still in the back of our minds, and he said too, but it's not over yet, Lindsay.
This was like a real-life cliffhanger for you.
Yeah, we're paused. We don't know what to say. We don't know who to thank. We just had to wait.
So who was behind bars? Even not knowing that key fact, the couple felt that the relatively quick arrest meant they'd been right to demand Egypt's case be moved to the state police.
Dwayne has news! What? Go, Dwayne!
They went on Facebook, where they'd amassed thousands of followers curious about the case.
Egypt's case is going to be solved.
Let's go.
Tell everybody.
My mom's calling me right now.
How are you feeling in that moment as you're live?
Oh my gosh. It was such relief.
And your instincts were right.
Yes. Yes, our instincts were right. And our voices matter.
In the weeks ahead, the state police would reveal the names of the suspects. It turned out there were three of them. But rather than solve the mystery, the names just added to the confusion.
When you found out that arrests had been made, and it wasn't Kenny, it was other people, what's going through your mind?
Then it was more so, too, of wondering and trying to figure out, like, who are these people? Because no one knew them.
Coming up, investigators finally release the names of those they say entered Egypt's apartment and killed her. But
Egypt Covington didn't know these men.
Could a single text explain the connection?
That's all it says, and that's chilling.
The names came out over the final weeks of 2020, one by one. Shane Evans, Timothy Moore, and Shandon Groom. The Michigan State Police had arrested and charged three men in the murder of Egypt Covington. For her family and friends, the names seemed to come out of nowhere.
I grew up in a small town. Everyone knows everybody. So to have these individuals named, it was more so just like, where did they come from?
Confusing.
Yeah, very confusing.
In March of this year, the three appeared in a pretrial hearing broadcast over Zoom.
Please rise. 34th District Court is now in session.
Two big questions loomed. What happened in Egypt's apartment? And why would these three want to kill her?
During the pretrial hearing, the prosecution really laid out their case.
After all the focus on Kenny, Curtis, and other possible suspects close to Egypt, prosecutors were set to present an entirely new theory of the crime.
Your Honor, I believe the evidence in this case, particularly for the standard set for a preliminary exam, is overwhelming.
They established a key detail early on.
Timothy, Shandon, and Shane are all related. Shane and Timothy are brothers, and then Shandon is the cousin. And that's how they all know each other.
And it turns out Egypt did know one of the three men, Shane Evans. They'd gone to high school together, and she'd occasionally see Shane because he was hired by her neighbors to cut their lawn. Those very same neighbors in the duplex who had a license to grow and sell medical marijuana.
It appears to be a Dodge Ram entering the parking lot.
In court, prosecutors said they had video of a truck connected to the men. The truck was at a gas station right in Egypt's neighborhood on the night she was killed. But the bombshell evidence the state had? An interview Shane Evans gave with the Michigan State Police.
102 is my brother.
He told them a story in vivid detail about what happened on the night Egypt was murdered.
And he says his brother and cousin, who lived in Toledo, were in town at the time, and they wanted marijuana. And Shane Evans says that he told police that he knows a guy because he cuts his lawn, but he's out of town for a festival. So Shane said, let's go to Steven's house and let's get the marijuana. And Steven lived on the right side of the duplex and Egypt lived on the left side.
Shane Evans told police he drove by the duplex and directed the other men to the apartment with the marijuana.
Pointing at the right house, and I kept going.
But then, according to prosecutors, the two of them go into the unit on the left and end up in the same unit as Egypt Covington, who didn't know these two men and had never met these two men.
In court, prosecutors explained what they believe happened next.
They say that the two of them went inside, Egypt was watching a movie, that they bound her with Christmas lights and then shot her one time through a cushion to try to really mellow that sound of the gunshot, and then left.
Prosecutors didn't say in court why they think the men decided to shoot Egypt. But Shane Evans told police that later that night, his brother Timothy sent him a text.
Whoops, wrong door.
Oops, wrong door. That's all it says is oops, wrong door. And that's chilling to hear that.
Wrong door. If you believe the prosecution's case, Egypt's fate all came down to that one mistake.
One wrong turn possibly led to your sister's murder.
That's right. They could have easily gone to the right door, took the stuff out of there, and nobody would have been harmed. It didn't have to happen.
The Michigan State Police told Dateline there wasn't one piece of evidence that led to the arrests. They said the Van Buren detectives did a lot of work, but didn't have the resources to fully analyze the evidence they'd gathered. The Van Buren Township Police declined to comment on their handling of the case ahead of trial, but told us that in court, evidence will show why they weren't able to solve it. A trial could come next year. Prosecutors have charged Moore and Groom with first-degree murder. Evans faces the charge of felony murder.
Thank you, Judge, and good morning.
Their attorneys are already working to poke holes in the prosecution's case.
This was an incomplete investigation, and there is a lack of evidence against my client.
The defense says the video of that truck prosecutors have is too grainy to identify anyone, and they want Shane Evans's interview with police to be thrown out.
The defense attorneys were saying that the evidence is circumstantial. They were saying you don't know what happened inside of the unit. You don't know that they shot and killed Egypt.
Egypt's dad and stepmom say they have a lot of questions.
I am not settled that my daughter was killed for a bag of freaking weed that you can freaking get anywhere. You don't have to go rob a place with a gun to get weed in Michigan. You just don't need to do that.
The state police say there is no evidence pointing to any involvement by Kenny in the crime. Curtis, who once believed Kenny was guilty, told us that if these are the men who killed his girlfriend, he wants justice to be served. And after all that's happened, Kenny still lives in the small town of Belleville.
There's a lot of people out there that owe Kenny and Kenny's family an apology. It's huge.
You'd like to see apologies?
Yes, I would.
I think it's time for Kenny to just get out of this entire situation and be able to try and live his life the way that he deserves and should have lived from the day that Egypt was murdered moving forward.
Spurred on by the case, Lindsay has created her own true crime podcast.
Welcome to Can't Stop, Won't Stop, where we can't stop and we won't stop being warriors fighting for justice.
She says the families of other murder victims have reached out to her, seeking help in more unsolved cases. Lindsay and Dwayne are planning their wedding for March of next year. It's the sort of celebration that usually brings a family together.
But for now, the Covingtons remain divided.
Do you think Egypt would want the family to mend
the
problems?
Of course she would. Of course she would, yeah. I don't know if that can happen, but she would have wanted that. We'll see. We'll see with time what can happen.
There's hope.
There's hope.
The whole family has been working to keep Egypt's memory alive. Chuck has set up a fund in Egypt's name to help kids learn to play musical instruments. And he's proud of this monument the town of Belleville created for her. The inscription comes from Egypt's journal.
A memorial in a playground. Because Egypt very much liked kids. She would have been a great mom. She would have been a great mom.
What did the world lose when it lost Egypt?
It lost the brightest light and ability to grow that it ever could have had, because she would have been one of those people that would have made a difference no matter what.
Nobody knows how life goes.
So many of Egypt's family and friends say they'll remember her for all the love she put out in the world.
She was great at receiving love, and she was great at giving love.
Much of it through that soaring voice.
Nobody knows how it unfolds, so as you wait for tomorrow.
When she was singing to them, it gave you a sense of joy. She had that ability.
Silence too soon, but never forgotten.
Before today, let yourself grow.
That's all for this edition of Dateline. We'll see you again next Friday at 9, 8 Central. And of course, I'll see you each weeknight for NBC Nightly News. I'm Lester Holt for all of us at NBC News. Good night.